Well, hello. Today is Thursday, February 22nd, 2024. Thanks for joining the TCOT podcast, episode 49, The Sleepy Slayer. It aired in season 8. It was episode 4, and it originally aired on October 14th, 1964. I'm Dee.
And I'm April. The TCOT podcast is a Perry Mason fan podcast. We love Perry Mason.
It's a tongue twister.
Yes, it is a tongue twister. We love Perry Mason, the 60-year-old black and white TV show, and we like to talk about it, and so we decided to start this podcast. We choose the episodes by doing a random number generator, and we are now in season 8, when we are going through each season so that we can enjoy all the changes, all the differences, and let each season have its moment to shine. There will be spoilers.
Yep, lots of spoilers.
And this was an interesting episode, don't you think?
I thought it was interesting. I did think it was interesting. I never thought Rachel was cuckoo. So she was putting on all that for them, and they thought she was a nervous wreck. I just thought she was a mean woman.
Well, it was another relative trying to get money. They like to try to get their inheritance. You know,
She wanted it now, and she didn't want to leave because he was going to cut her out the will. But, you know, sometimes you just got to go ahead and live your life and don't worry about it. But I think women back then, they had limited choices.
Right.
And she had, like she said, dedicated a lot of time to her uncle. And she really felt like she deserved it.
Right.
So, but
at the same time,
it
didn't seem like she had to work. And that was a very nice bedroom. With all that
she was living good.
Cut glass crystals with the alcohol in it and everything. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Did she work for her uncle? I couldn't.
Well, it seemed like she ran the house because the housekeeper, you know, when the police wanted to talk to somebody, it was Rachel that they wanted to talk to. So the head of the house.
Chief of staff for the house.
Chief of staff.
I think that's right.
Yeah. And Abner wasn't a very nice person either.
Oh, he was horrible. That's why I wouldn't stay there for $1 million.
Right.
And I'd have been done shot him well before she did.
Well, let's get.
No, I'd have walked out.
Let's get into it. And then Perry Mason loves to open on a storm. This is a several
fake rain.
Yes, torrential rain. And
you can just see the person standing there pouring water.
Holding the hose.
And somebody else is, making the wind with the blower.
And that fake lightning. So we see Nurse Glover is filling a syringe and preparing to give it to an old man that we're going to know is Abner Gordon. So let's talk about these two. Phyllis Clover was played by Gigi Peru, and she is a member of the Still Alive Club.
She was very young in that show. She's pretty young.
Well, along with her sister, Lauren. Her sister is the young girl from Nine Dolls.
Oh, okay.
Could you find out who I am? Nobody seems to know. And it's interesting because she has Lauren has an Instagram. Did I send you that link?
Oh, no kidding. I didn't see it.
Pay attention to it. Yeah, she doesn't have that many followers. I only follow her because I looked it up and saw that she had an Instagram. Anyways, so Gigi is in 2 episodes of Perry Mason. Mm-hmm. And she's had 86 roles from 1943 to 2020. So she just recently stopped.
Stopped acting. Yeah. Good for her.
For most of it, a lot of it was she was doing voice acting in cartoons and stuff. But she was in My Three Sons, Lassie. She was in Bonzo Goes to College. Now, it was the same monkey, but it wasn't the one with Ronald Reagan in it. Remember the Bonzo?
Reagan wasn't in Bonzo Goes to College.
Right.
Oh, okay.
She was in Gunsmoke, Gomer Pyle. And what's interesting is there's a lot of people in this episode that were in Gomer Pyle. And she was also in Brady Bunch. Now, Abner Gordon is in 4 episodes of Perry Mason, and we're going to see him a lot, but I'm surprised we haven't done one of his. He was in 154 roles from 1944 to 1985, including To Kill a Mockingbird, Wagon Train, Green Acres, Bonanza, Petticoat Junction. He was in Star Trek The Next Generation. I mean, I'm sorry, Star Trek The Original Series. He played a wise old Indian. I'm like, come on, people.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, he was in the one where Kirk ends up losing his memory, and he gets taken in by these supposedly Native American type people on this other planet until he gets his memory back. I put a picture in the show notes of him as this quote-unquote Indian. All right. So she's got the syringe, and he's like, oh, he's very grumpy. The nurse says, I have to give the medication to you. The doctor told me to. And then he starts yelling and screaming, no, no, no. And he swings around and hits a vase with his cane. And then he clutches at his chest and he collapses onto the floor. That was very dramatic.
Well, that's not funny.
It was dramatic. I mean.
Well, it was dramatic, but it wasn't funny.
Right.
Except that he was a mean old man.
Yes. So then Dr. Lambert comes in, and he's played by Hugh Marlowe, who's 6 episodes of Perry Mason. We saw him in The Nebulous Nephew. He was the relative who was conniving in trying to trick the 2 old women. And I think he ends up being the murder victim in that one.
And he was also in The Hasty Honeymooner, too, wasn't he?
In The Hasty Honeymooners, right, yeah. Right. So he had 69 roles from 1964 to 1982, including Andy Griffith. And I put a picture in the show notes of him with Andy. He played a con man. And he was also in Another World, and we had talked about him being in The Day the Earth Stood Still. But he was also in Meet Me in St. Louis with Judy Garland. So the Dr. Lambert is seeing to Mr. Gordon, and Nurse Clover is standing by, and he says, this is the 3rd stroke he's had this month. The doctor comments that the old man is so filled with hate, even death despises him. I mean, 3 strokes, you think there would be damage.
And this is the 3rd stroke this month. Not the 3rd stroke he's had. I mean, you would think there would be some damage.
Right. So he tells the nurse to increase the heparin that he had been prescribing to 1 cc, and that he's going to go check on Rachel when he leaves.
Heparin is a drug used to prevent blood clots. And it would prevent additional strokes. Oh, so okay.
Interesting. So I wonder, they still use it today?
I think now they use something called warfarin.
Okay.
I think it's a predecessor to warfarin.
When he comes out, he runs into the housekeeper, Sadie Norman. She's anxiously waiting in the hallway. Now, Sadie is played by Joan Tompkins, and she's in 3 episodes of Perry Mason. She had 95 roles from 1954 to 1980, including 8 is Enough, Gomer Pyle and Bewitched. And she's like, could you check on, first of all, Dr. Lambert consoles her by saying Mr. Gordon will be all right. And then she's like, that Rachel is so nervous and upset, and could you go check on her? So he enters Rachel's room, and I have a clip.
You're playing hopscotch with 1 foot over the precipice, Rachel. He's off before you yourself have a stroke.
How's Uncle Abner?
He'll live.
Wouldn't you know?
You were hoping I'd say this was the end.
That upsets you, doesn't it? Makes you sick. Tell me, Doctor, how old do you think I look?
You want me to say 40 or 45, I suppose.
In a month, I'll be 35. 15 years of my life, like someone in jail, looking after him, waiting for him to die.
There's never been a lock on the front door.
Oh, sure. Walk out. Let him cut me off, his own flesh and blood. His only flesh and blood.
But staying here, you become nothing but raw nerves and twisted emotions. How much is it worth to be a sick, empty creature drained of every drop of the joy of life? How much?
$1 million, Doctor. My legacy.
What is hopscotch? 1 foot over the precipice.
Well, you know, she's about to have a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, right.
But one thing you can't see from here is that when he walked into her room, she was taking a big snort. She had a liquor bottle and she was hitting it. But
there were beautiful crystal decanters too, by the way. Yeah.
I understand why.
Yeah. But she's willing, you know, she thinks that that's her money, that's her legacy. And then Lambert says, well, he's had his third stroke in a month and could live on for years. And then she says, no, she'll kill him first.
Let's make a note.
Yep, she said it. She said the words. So,
apparently she had been threatening to kill him for a while.
And she's been there for 15 years, so she must have moved. She said she's 35, so she moved in when she was 20 years old. And I guess when she moved in, she thought, oh, he'll die in a few years. that's a bad thing about waiting for someone to die. They can live on.
Yeah, that is tough. Yeah. That's tough, yeah. But for $1 million,
yeah.
I didn't make $1 million in 15 years.
Mm-mm. So now we have another scene of more rain, lots of rain, and Rachel is at a desk and she's looking very nervous and apprehensive. She uses keys to open a desk drawer and she opens a lockbox. Then she hears a noise and puts the box away and then pulls it out again. And then she's going through the box and underneath some papers, there's some money, some bills. And then we flash to people, somebody outside, a man trying the door, and he's holding a crowbar. And then they flash back into Rachel. She takes out a wad of money and holds it in her hand. She's so dramatic.
She is very dramatic.
Yeah. You know, you'd think he would have given her a salary or something.
She might have had a salary.
Oh, she spent that too.
But maybe not. Maybe not. Because, like I said, you know, he was mean.
Right. He just said, you know, I put a roof over your head. I put food in your mouth, you know. So now we see the man trying to open the door with the crowbar. And then in another bedroom, Bruce Dre is alerted by the noise at the door and jumps up and runs out. And he calls out, who is it? Now, Bruce Dre is played by John Napier. And he's in 3 episodes of Perry Mason. And he had 31 roles from 1956 to 1969, including Gomer Pyle, Days of Our Lives, and Land of the Giant. Do you remember that show?
Mm-hmm.
Where there were these little people that had come from another planet,
mm-hmm.
and they were always trying to get their ship fixed so they could go back, but they were like running under the boards of the, you know, in places and ducking and hiding, and every once in a while one of them would get captured. And they'd have to try to figure out a way to save him. So he's like, then we see the man at the door with the crowbar backs up and Rachel yells, "It's just me, Bruce."
Does she know somebody's trying to break in? Or
no,
is she
she's just worried about, well, he, and we don't know which one he heard. Maybe he heard the door.
Mm-hmm.
And then
he did crack open the door.
Yeah. But she's like, "It's just me, Bruce."
But maybe she didn't want Bruce to come around because she's trying to pilfer this money.
Right. And then we see the man running away through all that mud, leaving tracks and everything. And Bruce is like, "Rachel, are you all right?" That yelling, whispering thing. And he goes, "It's all right, Bruce. I just dropped something." And then the camera focuses on the water bills in her hand. And now it's the next day, and we can see the footprints that the man left in the garden. The police is there, and they are talking to the butler, who is Charles Norman. And he is played by Carl Swenson. He's been in 4 episodes of Perry Mason. He had 175 roles from 1935 to 1978. He was in 41 episodes of Little House on the Prairie. He had a regular role. I think he was was he like a storeman or something?
And I never watched that show very much. Did you watch it?
I watched it up until what they did to Mary. First they made Mary blind. Then they gave Mary a blind husband. And then they had a baby. Cool. And then the blind husband got his sight back.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, well.
He had to take care of the baby.
Right, and her. But now he can see. And why he doesn't want to be strapped with no blind. Anyways, it was a very.
Oh, I don't think
it was a very sad show. There was nothing.
Yeah.
They did have that one episode with the black kid that was really good. And of course, Papa Joe was good to everybody. But he was also in Lassie and Mod Squad, Ironside, and Gomer Pyle. Everybody was in Gomer Pyle. Yes. So he says, the police officer points out that somebody did try to break in the house, no question, and he might come back. And then he does a rundown of who lives in the house: Abner Gordon, his niece Rachel, Bruce J., who is Mr. Gordon's secretary, and the nurse Phyllis Clover, and then Sadie, the housekeeper. And he says, "And you're the butler?" He goes, "Chauffeur, butler, and gardener." He wanted to make sure he got all his titles listed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, a lot of hats.
Now the cop wants to see Rachel because he asks who's the one in charge. And he says, "Oh, it's Rachel's the one in charge." But Rachel is busy because Harlan, the accountant, is reprimanding Rachel. And Harlan is played by J. Edward McKinley. And he's in 2 episodes of Perry Mason. He's had 91 roles, including Little House on the Prairie, Bewitched, and Ironside, and Andy Griffith Show.
But not Gomer Pyle. Okay.
So he's yelling at her. He cannot turn a blind eye. And, you know, he's like, to what Rachel is doing. And he's just giving her the degree because, I guess she's stealing money. And Bruce is there as well. And she says, she begs, she needs help. Bruce doesn't want to be in the middle. The butler comes in and says the police wants to talk to her. And she says, "Not now," and tells him to get out. And she continues to, like, talk to, ask Harlan for more time. And says, "It's not like I stole the money." And he says, "Well, your dictionary has a different definition for embezzlement." And then he storms out. And Bruce says, "I'm sorry," to Rachel. But she says, "Well, you didn't have to call the accountant and accuse her of stealing, and she says he didn't call the accountant. Harlan found the discrepancy itself.
So there must have been some stuff in a book.
Right.
And she took money from petty cash, but I guess he'll find out about that later.
Yeah.
So there must have been some finagling also in the company books. But,
right. And then she threatens him, saying, if the last thing I do, I'll have you thrown out of this house for good. Well, for between you and me, please throw me out.
He was about ready to go anyway.
Anyways, right. So she storms out of the room, leaving Bruce. And she sees the nurse and she goes, which way did Harlan leave? And Harlan says, no, he didn't leave. He went upstairs to see Abner, to see Mr. Abner.
She's real bitter, though. Mm-hmm. Rachel, I mean, everybody in the house seems pretty upset and not very happy.
Right.
Down to the housekeeper and the butler. I mean, between Rachel and Uncle Abner, they've made everybody miserable.
Right.
So Nurse Clover goes into the room where Bruce is sitting at the desk with his head in his hands. She rushes over to him because she thinks he might be having trouble breathing again. He convinces her that it's just this house and Rachel. He's trying to get out of here. He wonders if he leaves, what will happen? At this point, Nurse Clover puts her hand on Bruce's chest and says, it's different for you now, darling. You're well now, and you have your whole life ahead of you. So this is a little love thing we got going on here. And he says, our life. And they kiss. Wow. So Abner Gordon, Rachel, and Harlan Phillips, the accountant, are in Mr. Gordon's room. Abner Gordon is instructing Rachel, today is Thursday. By Monday, you will make full restitution of the funds you've drained out of my account for that no good parasite you're supporting. So there's a no good parasite in the picture. Right. So something's making Rachel happy sometimes.
Right.
Anyway, she begs, please, Uncle Abner, please. And he insists, by 5 o'clock Monday. Do I have to tell you what the alternative is? He's going to throw his niece in jail. Anyway, so the next picture we see is Perry Mason, attorney at law. And at that point, I was wondering, who's in there?
Right. Who ran
I thought it was going
to
be Rachel in there.
Right.
Right. But no, it's not Rachel. It's Bruce J. So Perry wants to know how the shenanigans going on at the Gordon household are affecting him. Jay explains, I put myself through college working at an Abner Gordon chemical plant, and there was an accident that affected my lungs. I didn't sue as there was a mix-up with Gordon's insurance. And Gordon was kind, so you know it was some shenanigans because Gordon is not kind.
Right.
But apparently he was kind at this point. He paid his bills. He brought him to his home to recuperate, and Jay explains he's been there ever since, working as a secretary librarian. So Gordon promised that whenever he wanted to leave, he could, and that he would give Jay $50,000. But now Jay wants to leave. There's a girl and a bookstore business, he explains. Well, we know who the girl is. The girl is Miss Clover.
Yes.
Anyway, Perry thinks he should talk to him soon because he is entitled to the money. Perry agrees to talk to Gordon. He explained that the money is a gift and it's revocable at a moment's notice without something in writing. And Jay didn't have anything in writing. The only thing he had was that it was provided in the will. But Perry said if it's provided in the will, that might be enough to assure payment. But Bruce explained that Gordon has always threatened Rachel with cutting her out of the will. And he had a second will drawn up, which he waves in her face all the time. And the second will doesn't leave him anything. Everything goes to charity. So Perry said the validity of the second will is definitely in question. So the next scene, this was a good scene. I was shocked. Rachel is in the arms of a man, and I guess this is the no good parasite.
Right.
They're kissing and hugging, and then he pulls away and said, "Did you bring money?"
That's a parasite, yes.
That's a parasite. Did you bring the money? She looks sad. She looks so upset. She said, "Yes, but I stole it, and Gordon's going to send me to jail. I have to have all the money back by Monday." He turns, gets his coat, and heads for the door. She said, "What should I do? What should I do?" He responds, "You better pray your uncle dies before Monday. Oh, and lock up when you leave." And then he's gone. God! Didn't you feel sorry for him?
I did feel sorry for her, but, you know, and he's a jerk. He's definitely a jerk.
But she's a smart woman, and she made that bid, I guess. Anyway, so she comes out of the apartment, and Charles, the butler, is waiting. He asks if she wanted to go to the police station, because she promised the police that she would come by there the next day when she wouldn't talk to him the night before.
Right.
So she said, "No, she had some errands to run, and she'll just walk." She told him to go home. And he's really worried about her. He was a nice little butler, wasn't he?
Yeah, they both, the staff was very nice.
Yeah, he said he'd drive her wherever she wanted to go. And she orders him to go home and walks off. But that was because now she's in a pawn shop trying to buy a gun. So that's why she didn't want Charles around.
Right.
So the clerk is showing her a gun, and he describes the gun. And then, you know, they go through all the procedure for name and address and filling out forms and stuff. But then he tells her that the police demand a 3-day waiting period when you buy a gun. 3 days. She don't have 3 days.
Nope.
So she says she changed her mind and she runs out. But she goes to another shop. And at the second shop, she asks, "Is it necessary that there be a record of this gun purchase?" Then she pulls some money out of her purse and slips it across the counter. And her and the clerk exchange looks. So the next scene, she got the gun. So it must have worked out. But the outside, wasn't it fakey
the
looking?
The woods in the background, yes.
It was so fakey looking. Yeah. It looked like my fake Christmas tree. Oh, gosh. Anyway, so she opened the package, pulls out the gun. She loads it with the bullets. You can hear all this thundering and lightning in the background.
No rain, just thundering and
Thunder and lightning. And after loading the gun, she points it at a target, and she keeps seeing Uncle Abner's face in the target. And she keeps seeing his face. She keeps seeing his face. She finally just shoot. So let's see. So next, we're in the kitchen.
Yeah. It's a big kitchen, too. I like that stove. It's a big stove.
Yeah.
And there's Nurse Glover, Charles, Sadie, and Bruce are all in the kitchen. And Sadie is going to go pour some coffee. And Charles reminds her the coffee pot handle is loose. And she reminds him that he's been promising to fix it. Oh, come on. They got all that money and they can't fix it. So it must be one of those pots that you put on the stove, because it was a percolator. That you would on the stove and it would heat. You would actually put it on and then it had like a tube going through the top, and there would be a little bulb on a little thing on the top. You could see the coffee perking through it.
Now, I've never used anything like that, but Sadie went to Uncle Abner and said, "Could we buy a new coffee pot?" And he said, "No!
No! make Charles fix it."
Like that one.
So Rachel comes in the kitchen, and the nurse is like, "You made us come in here. We've been waiting for over half an hour, and it's time to give your uncle his medication." And Rachel is yelling, "Let's not interfere with the creature comfort of the great Abner. Let him walk all over us, and we're supposed to say, thank you." And so she has this plan that she is going to leave the house at, she wants everybody to leave the house at noon and stay away till Sunday. She says she'll give him his medicine and make sure he's okay, but he has to learn that he can't crack the whip and watch us dance. And the nurse is like, but we can't do that. And Rachel says, I'm giving you an order. I want you out, and they are not to tell Abner. Now leave me alone. So then she goes over and grabs the coffee pot and scalds herself, and she screams. I didn't understand that.
Well, she grabbed the handle, and the handle was broken.
Right, but it seemed like she did that on purpose. Well, why the whole scene to make it seem like they wanted her to leave? Maybe she just wanted them all there so she could burn herself. But anyway, well, we don't know.
Oh, why would they? Yeah.
It was.
Why did she ask them all to be there?
Yeah.
In the kitchen?
Right.
Yeah. That was one reason, but she did want them to leave. So she wanted to tell them all that they had to leave. I thought that was dumb. I mean, that's a little obvious.
Right. So now we see Dr. Lambert comes out of Rachel's room, and she tells the nurse that Rachel is close to a nervous breakdown. And he tells the nurse to give Abner the heparin and let him sleep, and also let Rachel sleep. He says he's given her a heavy sedative and expects her to sleep the clock around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Rachel is asleep, her arm is bandaged, the clock shows 11, and then the next scene, the clock shows 5:05 in the kitchen. So they fade out. I like when they do that. This is the clock fade. Somebody in Perry Mason.
To show the passage of time.
Yes, they like to do that. And then we see Sadie coming to the kitchen. Her hair is down. She's wearing a robe. So this is obviously her early morning thing. She gets up and probably puts some bread in the oven to start baking or whatever.
And then she had to use that broken down coffee pot to
make
some coffee.
Yeah. So she hears footsteps. Yeah, she fills the coffee pot with water, doesn't she? Yep. Then she hears footsteps and looks up. Boy, they monitor this.
Actually, she was using the tea kettle, because I did look.
Yeah. Oh, okay. The tea kettle.
She moved from the coffee pot to the tea kettle. They probably had to have instant
coffee this morning. Yeah. And she looks up, and it's like, these people are very nosy. First, Bruce. Nobody can make a sound in this house. I wouldn't like to.
Mm-hmm. Well, then they worried about Uncle Abner, too, probably.
Right, right.
So, and Rachel's supposed to be sleeping around the clock.
Right. So who was up at 5 o'clock? Well, it could have been Bruce. Maybe Bruce was slipping into Phyllis's room.
Nurse Clover's room.
Right.
Or in or out.
Yeah. So she goes upstairs to investigate. And she looks in Rachel's room and the bed is empty. And then she goes into Abner's room just in time to see Rachel shoot her husband. And she screams. Shoot her uncle. Her uncle. Sadie screams, and Rachel not just faints, she just collapses straight down.
Just collapses.
Yes.
But he had it coming. I would have been surprised if anybody else had died.
Right. He definitely had the I'm gonna be the murder victim sign on. He had the target on him.
Yeah. Because he was just too mean.
Right. Sometimes it surprises you who gets killed, but this time it's definitely him. So now we see Perry is at the Gordon house, and you notice he's got his arm in a sling. This time.
Oh, did he have a sling in that time?
I believe he did. Maybe.
Oh, okay. I didn't notice. Okay. Maybe.
Okay. So he's looking at the books and he notices one is upside down. He straightens it and rubs his hand against the books, noticing the dust or lack of. And then Bruce comes in and he's taking Nurse Clover to her home because she has her own place when she's not there. And Perry asks if he's been reading law books, and Bruce explains that Abner Gordon went to law school, but he took over his father's business after he passed the bar, and he never actually practiced law, but he did take care of all the lawyer needs. And Bruce wants to know if Perry will represent Rachel Gordon. And Perry says the policeman says she fired 3 times point blank into Abner Gordon's head and chest. He also says he can't represent Rachel because Bruce is his client. And Bruce is like, well, that's just, about the will and had nothing, and Perry points out that the will come into play because if Rachel is found guilty, she won't collect anything under the will. And Perry says, I represent you, considering the will, it would be a conflict of interest. But he will speak to Rachel and give her some advice. So then Andy and Sergeant Bryce are talking. We've seen both of these guys a bunch of times.
Yeah. Ray Collins, I think he's been gone.
Right. So, his name is still in the credits, but he's not.
Yeah, his name stayed in the credits, but Andy and Bryce have basically taken over for him.
Right. And they're talking to Charles and Sadie, and Sadie is explaining that Rachel asked them to leave noon Saturday, that she could be alone with Abner. And they asked if there was a gun in the house, and there's never been a gun in this house. How does she know what Abner does? But then maybe when Rachel talked to the police, they advised her to buy a gun because of the break-in. And Andy says she never talked to the police. And then Perry walks up and they explain that although Bruce is his client, he's consented to speak to Rachel. And just then, Dr. Lambert and an orderly wheel Rachel out on a stretcher. It's one of those low stretchers, too. It seems like it would be very uncomfortable to move around. Mm. Andy's like, you can't go with Rachel. And Lambert says, she's a sick woman. And Andy says, she'll get her medical attention in the prison ward at the County General Hospital, and no one can see her without the consent of the district attorney, Berger.
So now Lambert and Perry are talking, and it looks like they're at Clay's Diner, but I don't know for sure.
Right.
Lambert is definitely sympathetic with Rachel. How long can they continue to torture a human being and push her further and further into a corner with no hope of escape? He knew she was on the verge, but he didn't think, and then he stopped. And Perry said, unless it's doctor-patient confidentiality, you'll have to repeat that in court. So you might as well go ahead and finish saying what you started to say, which was that he didn't think Rachel would kill her uncle.
Right.
But so Lambert continues, Rachel was in hell with the life that Abner had restricted her to. Perry wonders if the shooting was not drug induced. Was it drug induced or was it calculated and premeditated?
Right.
Lambert said he's not going to let Perry put words in his mouth. Perry is curious about the shot that Lambert gave her, which Lambert explains it relieves pain and anxiety. Perry asks if the drug would remove the inhibition that Rachel faced and instead encourage her to do something like shoot her uncle. If, Lambert responded. Lambert thinks she was unconscious when she shot Abner, like sleepwalking or something.
Right.
And there's no proof that she wanted to kill her uncle. And Perry said, despite all her repeated threats to do so. And just then the clerk comes over and tells Mason he has a call from somebody named Drake. Mm. Perry takes the call. Paul said that the dame was surely out to kill someone, and Andy is working quickly on this one. They found the clerk who sold her the gun and to whom she paid not to report the purchase. And now Paul was talking to Harlan. Paul wants to know what Rachel did with the $5,000 she stole. Harlan said, nah, she's not the gambling type. She didn't gamble away. Paul asked, well, what man did she give it to? And Harlan automatically responds, but then realizes he spoke out of turn.
Right, yeah.
And Paul said, well, go ahead and name the man. You've already started now. And Harlan is reluctant, but he finally names him, Tracy Walcott. We know that he's a bum.
Right. And Paul is now talking to Tracy, and I have a clip.
So like you say, I'm unconcerned. So what?
Not even a sympathetic shrug? After all, she stole $5,000 for you.
A loan. Strictly a business loan. She'll get every cent back.
Before or after?
Before or after what?
They strap her in the gas chamber for murder? You know, she's still at General Hospital. And if you ask real nice, they might let you in to see her.
Sorry. Got a date.
So soon? Can the new one afford you?
Look, Seamus, if you're digging to get my goat, you're wasting your time. Now, as a matter of fact, I have got a date with a young lady who's got quite a bit of money, and she might promote me in a business of my own.
Mm-hmm. Say, killing old man Gordon. Was that Rachel's idea or yours?
You're a wise guy, aren't you? Will you chew on this? If you and that shyster you work for think you can drag me into this, you got another thing coming. I'll sing, oh, how I'll sing on the witness stand. And it won't be a lie either. I'll swear that for the last month, that's all Rachel could talk about, think about, dream about. Exactly how she was going to kill her uncle. Now, do you get the picture?
Yeah, I get it.
Oh, you're clumsy. Now, what am I gonna do?
Tracy, boy, you smell real pretty. You might just get yourself a whole platoon of promoters.
We didn't talk about Tracy Walcott because Tracy Walcott, he's played by Robert Brown, and he's in 3 episodes of Perry Mason. He only had 32 roles from 1948 to 1994, but interesting enough, he was in The Heat of the Night, that's with Carol O'Connor, and he was in an episode of Archie Bunker's Place, which is also with Carol O'Connor. He's in an episode of Columbo, Star Trek, the original series, and he was in a bunch of episodes. He starred in something called Here Comes the Brides, which was, I think, a takeoff of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Remember that movie? It was about the lumber company and getting in brides and stuff. So Tracy obviously is just taking this, doesn't really care.
No, he doesn't care at all. And he's kind of good looking.
Yeah, so he's very good looking.
And you know, charming. He probably charmed old Rachel.
Rachel, right. And he's dressing up, and he had a big bottle of cologne on his dresser that he was patting on his face. And Paul accidentally, on purpose, knocks it over on him. But one thing I did want to point out is that he called, and we've heard this term before, he called Paul Seamus, and that's a term they used back then for a private detective.
Oh, really?
Yes, we've heard it in other episodes, too. All right, so he doesn't really care about him. He's off to find somebody else.
He ain't care nothing about her.
Yeah. And he just threw her under the bus about killing her uncle. So now,
and he said he'd tell it in court if they make him come to court.
Right. So now we're in Perry's office, and Bruce has given Perry a copy of the will. And him and Nurse Clover want to know if the courts can appoint someone to take care of the will, as Harlan refuses to be involved. And there are bills to be paid and business to handle, and Bruce doesn't have any authority to do anything. I guess Rachel handled everything.
Right.
And, you know, and they point out that everybody knew about the will, that Sadie and Charles knew they were going to get $50,000. Gordon never made, Abner never made a secret about the content. And Lambert and Harlan were going to get $25,000. And the balance of $1.5 million would go to Rachel. Paul walks in and says, Rachel Gordon has just been released from the hospital. And Bruce says, do you mean she was released on bail? And Perry's like, there's no bail in murder charges. And, you know, the nurse Clover said that, you know, we just went to the jail and they wouldn't let them see her. The phone rings, Paul answers, and he says to the caller, he didn't die from the bullets. And he now tells him that the report is that Abner Gordon was dead 3 hours before Rachel shot him. Jay is shocked and said, but how? And then Andy walks in and says, murder, that's how. And he has a warrant for Bruce's arrest. It's so funny how sometimes they can just walk in on Perry and other times Perry is like hiding people in here and there.
Right. Sometimes they're announced and sometimes they just walk. Well, maybe right. Della wasn't at her desk because Della was sitting in there with them. And if I may add, I did not like Della's wig this episode.
Okay. So the coroner is reporting the shots did not kill Gordon. Instead, he died from coronary insufficiency, which could be criminal or natural causes. And at the time of his death, he was supposed to get 1 cc of the heparin. The coroner found the bottle of heparin, which is not naturally colorless, but this bottle was brownish, meaning it had been tampered with, and he found out that it was half heparin and half adrenaline. So that would cause Abner Gordon's heart to beat itself to death. And then next on the stand was Harlan Phillips, and he testified that a week before Gordon's death, that Bruce had talked about wanting to leave his job. He mentioned the money that Mr. Gordon claimed to have promised him. And when Harlan talked to him about it, he said something about rats leaving a sinking ship. And that he didn't say he wouldn't give it to him, but that Bruce would have to wait until Gordon was dead before he got the money through the will. That's kind of mean.
That's very mean.
And then he pointed out.
Let's put it this way, though. Sometimes you plan to leave money to people and they want it right away.
Right.
Well, you can't have it right away. I'm using it now.
I'm done. Right. And he points out that the second will did not provide any money for Bruce and that he wanted to leave Jordan so that he could marry Phyllis Clover. And now the nurse is on the stand and she testified that she did not plan on working after she married, that she did not plan on working at all after she married Bruce, that they were going to open a bookstore with the money that Abner Gordon promised him. So then she goes on to talk about Berger questions her about the prescription. And turns out that she ordered it, but that Jay picked it up and that she didn't open the package, that it was already open when she got it.
But she did say that when she used the new medication, it was colorless. So it hadn't been tampered with at this point.
Right. But the package was open. Maybe it takes some time to turn brown.
No, I don't think I don't think she meant the prescription was open.
Oh, just the shopping.
I think there was a package of prescription, Jay's prescription, some other stuff. So it was a package, but she didn't open it.
Right.
And then the butler got on the stand and he said he didn't open it either. When the package came, Bruce Jay was standing there and he took the package, went into his room and closed the door. So now Sadie testified that Mr. Jay gave her the open package. So it's obvious that he opened it.
Right.
And took out what he needed and then told her to give it to Miss Clover. But I think they're trying to say that he could have tampered with it. But Clover is already saying that when I gave him his medicine, it was colorless.
Right.
So that's kind of like a little conflict right there.
Right.
So Dr. Lambert testified. He's on the stand now. And he testified that adrenaline administered to Abner Gordon would have had the same effect as if a transistor radio, which runs on a one-cell flashlight battery, was hooked up to a generator. Lambert also confirmed that he took care of everyone in the house, including Bruce J. So he just talked a little bit about what Bruce J's problem was. Mm-hmm. He had chronic bronchitis and the first stages of pulmonary emphysema from an industrial accident. His breathing was the same as someone who had asthma, and Lambert had prescribed a nebulizer for emergencies, and the nebulizer contained adrenaline. That nebulizer. Wow, I've seen a nebulizer. Our mother uses a nebulizer. They don't look nothing like that. Wow. Yeah.
They've come a long way.
Yeah, they've come a long way. They kind of look like the little squeezy things that you use to get snot out of a baby's. No,
right, like a bulb. Yeah.
Okay, so now a car is driving down a dark street. Mm. We see Berger, then we see Perry. Berger said they've been out here more than 3 hours. Come on, more than 2 hours. I'm getting ready to leave. How long are you going to stay here? And Perry said, I'm going to stay as long as necessary. So what's going on now? Mm-hmm. Just then, someone walks down the street carrying a package. And then we see Walcott coming from the opposite direction, also carrying a package. I think they were carrying books.
Yeah, they were carrying books.
Right. Walcott stops to tie his shoe and lays down the book. The other man walks by and bumps Walcott and drops his book. And when they stand up, they've exchanged books. Then they start to walk off. Here come the cops, screaming and yelling. Walcott, it's the cops, it's the cops. But they catch them both. Berger looks inside the book, but we don't see what he sees. And then Andy says, let's take a look. And they pull up Walcott's sleeve and we see the needle marks. So that was a surprise to me. I didn't expect that. And right. I don't think I've seen anything like that in Perry Mason. That was pretty interesting.
It was. I know they've talked about heroin before. There's a, but
smack.
Smack. Yeah. Snow, and they called it snow, but snow isn't really heroin. So, yeah, so Walcott's on the stand now, and we assume now that he didn't get his fix, and he's, like, kind of talking slow and stuff, but actually he would be scratching, and he'd be a lot worse off than he really is. But he says he's been on this stuff for a year. Rachel didn't know he was a narcotic addict when they met, but when she found out, she sent him to a private clinic where they gave him Nalorphin.
So I guess Nalorphin is the compound used for narcotics overdose treatment, heroin in particular. It's also known as Narcan.
Oh, wow.
But yeah. I thought they would give him something. He said it didn't help him. It was right. Like talcum powder. So what was it supposed to, like, keep him from having his shakes and stuff?
Was right. It probably was the precursor to methadone, which is what they give him now.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe so. Yeah. Okay.
So the attempted cure didn't work, and he said they were both hooked, each in their own way. She used his habit to keep him in line. sometimes she couldn't pay, and it was bad. And then Perry's, like, now grilling him, you know, in that fire way he does. He goes, 2 nights before Gordon's death, you tried to break in the house. And he admitted that he had the fire inside. When he needed it, he would lie and steal, but not kill. And Perry said the simple answer was to kill Uncle Abner and collect $1.5 million that you could buy a lot of smack with that. And Walcott's like, no. And Perry says, you tried to break into the house to see her on Wednesday night. On Thursday, Gordon had the stroke and you didn't see her. On Friday, she said there would be no more money. And Walcott is, like, getting all agitated. He screamed, no. Rachel called me on Friday at midnight and told me there was money under my pillow. I found it, and I went out, and I got me a fix. I swear it, honest.
Believe me, please believe me. I may be a junkie, but I'm an honest junkie.
Right.
I don't think there's anything. Yeah, I already said right. He would lie and steal.
Right.
I don't think really you could believe him.
Right. So now Rachel's on the stand, and Perry stated, you know, wanted to know about her charges because she, you know, she did try to kill somebody. She goes, well, mm-hmm. You know, there's no homicide unless a living human is the victim. Have criminal charges been filed against you for firing shots into your dead uncle? And Rachel responded, not that I'm aware of. And Perry continued, but you did want to kill him. We need a clear picture of your actions, Miss Gordon. Perry said, your plan was to kill your uncle the next day while you were alone and claim it was some unknown housebreaker. And she said, yes. So you went into his room and shot him. You didn't know he was already dead. It was even assault, even if the gun wasn't loaded. And she responded, not if there's no present ability.
Okay, so present ability means that the person has the immediate ability to carry out the action in question. So we're not only getting medical knowledge tonight, we're getting legal knowledge as well.
Right.
Either a legal act or committing a crime. So I guess they're saying that she didn't have present ability because she was drugged and out like a light. Is that what they're saying?
Right. She didn't know what she was doing.
And she didn't know, oh, okay, that she was drugged and she didn't know what she was doing, so she didn't have present ability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then Perry continues to say, to convict somebody of assault, it must be shown that a person has intent to harm and present ability, which someone wouldn't know unless they read the law. And she said, I admit I tried to kill him. It was a terrible thing to do. And Perry asked about her arm. She says it's fine. And he said, it took courage to deliberately burn yourself.
Poor Rachel Gordon. You wanted everybody to feel sorry for you, to think you were on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a relentless drive to kill the person responsible for your condition. So, you know, she could even come up with justifiable homicide or plead insanity. Is that what they're thinking?
Right. But I think it's all proof that it was premeditated. You knew the pot was broken and you deliberately scalded yourself. You needed a reason for Dr. Lambert to give you a pain relieving opiate. But after Lambert gave you a sedative, you took Nolifine, am I saying that right? And that you found in your boyfriend's apartment, which counteracted the sedative. And I have a clip.
I never heard of such a thing.
And I never heard of such a deliberately evil plan. You knew if your uncle ever died, you'd be blamed. And so to divert all suspicion, you killed him. Not once, but twice.
That's a lie.
You not only fired bullets into your uncle's dead body, you put Bruce J's adrenaline into the bottle of heparin and created the mixture that killed him.
But I was asleep, I tell you. Ask Dr. Lambert. At 11 o'clock, he put me to sleep. He drugged me to sleep.
Then how were you able to phone Tracy Walcott at midnight and tell him to look under the pillow for the money you'd left him? How? No further questions.
And she does that thing where she covers her face.
Sobs quietly.
I guess that's a confession.
But we still don't get a confession.
No. But we prove that she wasn't drugged because she called Tracy and told him that she left the money under the pillow. So she proved that.
I don't know if that's enough to convict her. For mixing the heparin. You didn't have any proofs that she tampered with the heparin.
Right. But so, anyway, I don't know.
And she didn't confess. Usually, last week, he confessed.
Right.
It was nothing but a washing machine salesman.
So So now we have the closing scene, and Della says, I missed the clue of the 12 o'clock call. And Paul says, I got that, but how did you know she was reading the law? And Perry answers, if you see a crooked picture, you straighten it. I saw an upside down law book, and when I straightened it, I noticed it was of the penal code and that there was no dust on it. Della says, well, what if a maid's negligence had caused it, or if it was just an accident? And then Perry says, you know what Justice Holmes said about clues. And he said, and Della finishes it by saying, even a dog distinguishes between being stumbled over and being kicked. I don't know what that means.
Okay, because I was getting ready to ask you. What does that, I need some clarification on what exactly, how did that relate to?
Now, he has quoted Justice Holmes before in other episodes, but I don't know. But I guess that means. But
I still don't know what that has to do with anything. If you see a crooked picture, you straighten it.
When he finds a book. Well, so if she hadn't put the book upside down when she put it back, mm-hmm. I don't know. But so this was interesting. We saw an undercover bust. We saw a drug user.
Yeah.
We saw a gun. Illegal gun buying.
And I liked Phyllis Clover because she actually stood up to Rachel. She said, you don't have us waiting here for a half hour.
Right.
I ain't got stuff to do.
Right.
Even though she was a nice person, you know, she was nice to Mr. Gordon,
right.
But she was still trying to be very insistent. You must take your medicine.
Yeah.
So I liked her.
Right. I wanted her to get her stay-at-home marriage.
Well, I think she was going to help out in the bookstore.
So I think what's going to happen, I mean, they're going to get the money. Everybody's going to get the money except Rachel because she's going to jail. And hopefully, who cares if...
Well, what happens to the other million and a half?
Maybe they
could give it to Walcott.
Well, yeah, or maybe Bruce will make a case against it because, you know, he was injured.
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll just go to charity. But Rachel's not going to get it, and Walcott, well, he might even, you know, he's just going to be a drug user.
Well, they put him in jail.
Right, because he was engaged. He did commit.
They caught him and they busted him in the middle of a drug deal.
In the middle of a drug
deal. So he'll go to jail for that.
Right.
But, I don't know, in 2024, he probably would have got off. But back then, you know, that was a serious thing.
Right. And I like the fact that, I don't know about having people live in my house waiting on me. I just don't understand that. That would be nice, but would you like to have a couple living in your house?
Well, you know, this is a huge house.
It's not like... Yeah, they probably have their own wing.
On the same floor with him. I doubt that. Very serious. They're probably under the steps somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes, I would like to answer your question. I would love somebody to be here waiting on me.
Listeners, would you like to have somebody living in your house and waiting on you hand and foot?
I wouldn't even ask them to wait on me hand and foot because there's a lot of stuff I can do on my own. But if I could say, look, I want all these windows cleaned today, okay?
Right. And
I would love that.
I want some shepherd's pie. Could you make me some?
I'm in the mood for shepherd's pie. Oh, and I need to go to CVS. Could you start up the car? I'll be out in a minute. I need to go to the Piggly Wiggly.
All right. So, do you have any tea?
A little bit of tea. Okay. Little bit of tea. Let's see. Where is my tea? Well, today we're going to talk about a bit of a coincidence here. Because... another episode that we reviewed, which was the case of the Hasty Honeymooners, there were two married couples. There was a married couple, I'm sorry. So they were married on the show, and they were also married in real life. Hmm. And actually, one of the persons was Guy Munford, who played Dr. Lambert. But anyway, so
Hugh Marlowe, who played Dr. Lambert. Yes, he was married.
Yes,
to
Hugh Marlowe.
Yes.
Sorry. So in The Hasty Honeymooner, we had a married couple that was married in real life. In this episode, Sleepy Slayer, we have a married couple, the butler and the housekeeper, married on the show and married in real life. Oh. So Carl Swenson, who played Charles Norman, and Joan Tompkins, who played Sadie Norman, were married in real life. They were married from 1951 until his death in 1978. What a coincidence.
Right. That's very interesting. Thank you for that, T.
You're welcome. Okay. And so what are we going to do next week?
Next week, we're going to be in season 9, and I just rolled the random number generator, and it is the episode 6, Case
of the 6.
Carefree Coronary.
A carefree coronary.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you know what? We didn't talk about this, but I was thinking that it should have been the Sleeping Slayer instead of the Sleepy Slayer. Yeah. But I don't know. Hmm. Okay. So this is the Carefree Coronary.
Yes. Yeah, season 9, episode 6.
Okay.
All right. Okay, well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite episodes. I don't know why, but I just like
Sleepy Slayer.
Yeah, I liked all the intrigue and film noir scene where he's being chased down and stuff. So
yeah, that scene was good.
Yeah,
I did like that scene, and I was totally shocked. I didn't know that was gonna happen.
Right,
I was really surprised by that. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week with the Case of the Carefree Coronary. This is April.
And I'm Dee. Ta-ta for now.